Thank you very much. I speak to you at a time of such intense home planet emergency conditions that we must above all think of our union not merely as a federation of American states, but rather as the union of all species. Within the several major aspects of this emergency, the most ominous is the swift increase in the frequency and intensity of extreme weather events. This is causing the diebacks or extinctions of many species, and it is also forcing human food growing indoors. In one region after another, on our precious home planet, these extreme weather events have become so frequent and so devastating that farmers have lost confidence in surviving from outdoor crops. A large reduction in the pollution endangering our fragile earthly atmosphere would, of course, allow us to return to weather patterns more congenial to outdoor agriculture. But this reduction is extremely difficult to achieve because those responsible for the pollution have nearly total control of us and are making enormous profits not only from the process of pollution, but also from its effects. The bankruptcies of farmers victimized by extreme weather events allow the obscenely wealthy corporate polluters to buy land extremely inexpensively. The farmers become serfs on land they had earlier owned, or, worse, are forced into cities to live in squalor and die early from malnutrition. Since only the polluters have enough money to finance the expensive transition to indoor food growing, they gain greater control of the price of food and thus can increase their profits even more. These rising prices from pollution also benefit the polluters by causing people to become more fearful and thus less confident of their ability to resist successfully the malevolence of the polluters. As fear levels rise, citizens submit more and more abjectly to being controlled more and more extensively by police and military, acting in a manner more and more contrary to concepts of justice and decency. Also, more and more citizens become financially dependent on high fear levels. A return to low fear levels would mean fewer livelihoods for locksmiths, psychiatrists, police, military, weapons manufacturers, and many others. Interrupting this dynamic of vicious cycling is complex and arduous. Most citizens don't have enough stamina for it. Thus, the viciousness of the cycling intensifies. Thus, any significant interruption of it becomes even more complex and arduous. But need we despair because of this? Absolutely not. We need instead to create communities efficient enough to give us stamina adequate to the task. Also, we need to discredit those oppressing us so more citizens will be emboldened to reform themselves. I shall first suggest a strategy for discrediting our oppressors, because this is apt to yield greater short-term benefits than community reform. Let's now identify our oppressors. I prefer to call them the Fourth Reich, but the label Transnational Federation also is accurate. During the Cold War, it was a multinational coalition. It still has the appearance of a coalition, but now is dominated by the U.S., which has decided it's able to go it alone. It controls both mainstream U.S. political parties. It acts on behalf of people who have much more money than they need, much more money than they can reasonably spend during their lifetimes. But it is not a monolith. Rather, there's a quite significant division between those who want higher fear levels so they can peddle more war-oriented and security-oriented items, and those who want lower fear levels so, quote, consumer confidence, end quote, will rise, and they can peddle more automobiles, computers, telephones, etc. Most of those wishing higher fear levels support the Republicans, and most of those wishing lower fear levels support the Democrats. Neither faction wears the brown shirts of the Third Reich, but rather a uniform frequently consisting of a blue pinstripe suit and red power tie. The Fourth Reich dominates most of the U.S. national government bureaucracies, but there still are pockets of Third Reich nostalgia. For example, the Immigration and Naturalization Service. Many employees of this notorious quote service, end quote, remind us of the Third Reich when they bully people trying to sneak into the U.S. from Mexico. In these instances, it's important to notice that the Fourth Reich is hoping the folks from Mexico sneak past the Third Reich bullies because their illegal status means they can be forced to work for wages far below the legal minimum. Both Fourth Reich factions are dominated by white males strategizing secretly in back rooms and slyly using women and representatives of ethnic minorities as fronts for their surreptitious strategies. The infamous Condoleezza Rice is doubly valuable to them because she is both female and black. There is now much circumstantial evidence that the faction wishing higher fear levels knew in advance of the September 11th attacks, but allowed them to happen so it could whip the American people into a patriotic frenzy intense enough to support its program for hugely increased profits from Caspian oil and natural gas, and intense enough also to allow a massive stripping away of civil liberties in the U.S. and elsewhere. There's little doubt in my mind that this is so. In fact, the U.S. government not only seemed to know in advance of the attacks, but also perhaps helped to organize them. I think the very most important thing we can do right now is to present this evidence to relatives and colleagues of all those who lost their lives in those attacks. Since all major media outlets, whether radio, print, or TV, perform as a single-minded propaganda ministry for the Fourth Reich, our effort won't be easy. We should present our evidence as a kit or brochure rather than as just a leaflet or flyer. This will be rather expensive, but anything less than this would be monumentally disrespectful of all those innocent folks who lost their lives that day. I suggest, then, that we begin with the employees of the New York Fire Department, in hopes that they, in turn, will help us reach all the others. Almost certainly, they will help us when they become familiar with the evidence. We can then raise money for evidence kits for all employees of the New York Police Department and for all relatives of the dead. Once all these folks have digested the contents of the evidence kits, they'll almost certainly be eager to sue the U.S. government for reparations. Quote, reparations, end quote, because the government's behavior is equivalent to a declaration of war on its own people. I hope Ramsey Clark and Tony Serra will agree to head the legal team. There's so much evidence that it's currently somewhat scattered, but most of it can be found at copvcia.com and whatreallyhappened.com. You may also wish to check out globalresearch.ca. The current frenzy of patriotism is of no benefit to other species because patria, fatherland, is defined not as the entire earthly biosphere, but rather merely as a single, ruthless nation state. So not until the Fourth Reich becomes vastly discredited can we reasonably hope for any slowing of the various destructive processes leading toward a home planet nearly as lifeless as our moon. Since we indeed are dealing with a ruthless oppressor, we must expect to suffer casualties. Safe activisms are a thing of the past. We must become inwardly able to sacrifice our lives, then hope that such is never necessary. We must reverse the Fourth Reich's use of young people in dangerous situations. Let's allow young people to enjoy all the blessings of youth. Our special forces should be composed of elderly folks in relatively poor health. For example, me, 70 years old, emphysema, a stroke victim. Instead of, "I regret I have but one life to give for my country," let's hear lots of, "I regret I have but one life to give for my planetary life support system." Now I'd like to suggest how we can adapt our communities to current circumstances and thus become much stronger. First, we must recognize that the nuclear family no longer is an adequate household, regardless of how we assess it spiritually, morally, or aesthetically. In today's economy, nuclear mom and nuclear pop almost always are too exhausted by the short-term scramble for food and lodging to have sufficient energy for the household's long-term concerns about restabilizing the processes sustaining earthly life. So we need households of four or more adults. That way, three can do the short-term maintenance scramble, while the fourth volunteers for the household's favorite cause. It's enormously important that we return as soon as possible to movements guided by volunteers rather than by the current salaried professionals. A movement guided by professionals is really just a bureaucracy pretending to be a movement. Second, our communities must swiftly develop a reliable way to circulate accurate information, that is, information independent of the Fourth Reich's mass media propaganda. We must place as much emphasis on this as hippies did 35 years ago with their so-called underground press. But ours shouldn't be solely print media. Rather, it should include neighborhood radio and neighborhood video, discs and cassettes passed frequently from neighbor to neighbor. One of the great strengths of a neighborhood is that its residents can communicate accurately and thoroughly without resorting to telephones or mail services, whether postal or electronic. This way, police and military have to surveil us one-on-one, an activity so expensive that the scoundrels controlling them begin making concessions to us. The oral tradition, then, becomes increasingly important to us as the unspeakable Fourth Reich police-military state deepens around us. We should no longer be willing to appear on any radio or television show, nor in any publication which contains corporate ads. Third, each neighborhood should have its own monetary system as a way of minimizing the amount of money leaking via taxes to the infamous U.S. Federal Treasury. We can strengthen our neighborhoods and also our biosphere by getting whatever we need as close as possible to where we live. Fourth, the money kept from the Federal Treasury by means of local currencies can be placed in a neighborhood treasury to be used, say, to cover expenses for massive acts of resistance to the Fourth Reich. Or do a local tax system as a model of taxation based not on how much somebody, quote, made, end quote, but rather on the net environmental impact. Defoliators pay hugely, refoliators pay slightly. Fifth, to be effective within the deepening police-military conditions, neighborhoods must find ways to sustain relatively high levels of confidence. Mood is crucial. If we don't feel good, we won't care enough about our futures to be willing to go through the lifestyle changes necessary now to have those futures at all. This concludes the formal portion of my State of the Union address for 2002. I hope to keep in touch with you by means of future radio addresses. In closing, I would like to point out that the government of the United States of America in exile was formed in January of 2001 as a response to the November 2000 elections in the U.S. sector, wherein, in a quite perverse manner, the loser was installed as the winner. Finally, I want to bring your attention to an online petition which asks the U.S. Senate to investigate possible U.S. government foreknowledge of the September 11th attacks. I urge you to take a look at the petition and to help circulate it, even though requesting the Senate to do the investigation is like asking the fox to investigate the chicken.